Good morning, everybody, and thank you for attending the 2011 preliminary results presentation of Ocado. I'm very grateful for you all taking the time out to come here this morning. The agenda today is, first of all, Andrew will take us through the financial review. Obviously, a lot of the numbers that we'll be talking about today have actually been released already, so what we'll be doing today is fleshing out the detail on some of those. After Andrew, I'll be taking us through the business review, and then we're happy to take Q&A from all of you. Before I hand over to Andrew, obviously we announced earlier that Andrew will be leaving us soon after the audit and year-end results. We're very grateful to him for all of the hard work he's put into the business over the last few years. And in fact, before he worked for us, in a number of years before that, he introduced us to some of our key supporters. So we're very sad to see Andrew go. We're delighted for him for his exciting new opportunity. And I'd just like to take this moment to say thank you very much to Andrew for everything that he's done for us. Andrew.
So just to talk you through the headlines, gosh, this is. Can someone turn the sound down? It's rather loud, actually. Gross sales are obviously up 16.6%, which I think you all expected. EBITDA is up 26.6% to 27.9, which is about in the middle of the range that we said we thought it would come out when we spoke to you at the back end of last year. EBITDA margin's around 4.7%. Net assets of 172.9 million. Cash at the end of the year of 92.1 million, probably a bit higher than people were expecting. Net debt of 19.2. If you look at the statutory figures, revenue's up 16% to 598 million. Operating profit 1.1 million, compared with a loss last year of 5.4 million. And the loss before tax down to 2.4 million from 12.2 million in the prior year. If you look at some key underlying operational highlights, average orders per week, we're up 18.6% at 110,000. Items delivered exactly as ordered at 98.3, and deliveries on time or early at 92.3. If you look at the overall financial summary of the P&L, the gross sales 642, the revenue 598, gross profit, and I'll come on to talk about that in more detail, gross profit at 184.8 million, EBITDA at 27.9, no exceptionals, DNA at 26.8, EBIT, interest, and EBT all speak for themselves. If you just look at some of the key underlying figures in that, I think the DNA one is worth highlighting, where the DNA has fallen from 4.32% as a percentage of sales to 4.2% as a percentage of sales. And if we look at the gross sales figure compared to the first half was 297, the second half was 345. And so looking at the underlying EBITDA, and I think it's important to point this out, you know, we had a worse second half than the first half. We highlighted this very early on. The first half EBITDA margin was 4.8. The second half EBITDA margin is just under 4 at 3.94. If you look at the KPIs, the average order size has fallen a bit. It's fallen by 1.7%. So it's down to 112 pounds from 114.06. If you look at that in terms of half on half, the first half was 114.09, so the fall is largely in the second half, which is where we think we saw most of the pressure. If you look in terms of average orders per week, again, it's up 110,000. Actually, in the first half, it was 108,000, so you can see we had a good progression there. If you look at CFC units per hour, it's worse than it was last year. Last year, it was 121. This year, it's 111 for the whole year. If you look at the first half, you'll remember the first half was 114, so it's a little lower than the first half. On the other side of the operation, however, things are rather better. The deliveries per van per week are running at 145. That's up from 142 in the first half and 133 last year. Waste overall for the year is a little higher at 0.7. It was 0.63 for the first half and 0.64 in the prior year. Items delivered exactly as ordered improved significantly in the second half. It was 98 in the first half. It's overall 98.3. And that last smidge of improving it is quite tricky to do. We're getting it back to where we had it before. In terms of on time or early, it's pretty much the same in both halves. It was 92.7 in the first half and 92.3 in the second half. Not as good as last year, but we think that is going to recover. These are really just the underlying headline sales drivers. Gross sales are up to 643. Revenue, as I mentioned, is up to 598. Orders per week at 110. And the basket size has trended down a bit, and now it seems to be stabilizing about 2%, 2 to 3% below where it was in the prior year. If we look at the gross profit, the gross profit at 185, up from 162. The gross margin before other income at 30.8 against 31.3. And the other income up significantly, I'll come back to talk about that in a minute, at 12.6 against 6.2. And therefore, the gross margin, including other income, at 33% against 32.6. So just to give you a breakdown of this gross margin, and it's not in the pack, but just to talk you through, because I was on the phone with somebody this morning, and they asked me, well, can you give me the underlying detail of why your gross margin before other income is down? Tim and I are beginning to view this other income actually as a fundamental part of the overall money that we make from doing what we do. It's part of the income we get from suppliers. If I look at the breakdown underneath gross margin before other income and give you the changes in basis point terms, delivery income was down 28 basis points. JLP sourcing and branding fee was down 40 basis points. Wastage was down 13 basis points. Post-delivery adjustments, which are the changes we make after an order has gone to the customer if something is wrong, was down 48 basis points. Product margin itself before supplier funding was down 80 basis points. However, on the other side of the equation, supplier funding was up 1%. Supplier funding, and that's promotion, supplier funding to do with media was up 83 basis points. And supplier funding from Waitrose in terms of bonus and overriders were up 12 basis points. And our picking costs improved by around 4 basis points. So overall, actually, the underlying gross margin is down 20 basis points. The key things there are the funding we're getting from suppliers before other income is up very significantly. It's up around 2%. On the negative side, most of the negative things are actually things that we're doing. So post-delivery adjustments and waste getting worse by in total around 60 basis points. We would expect those to recover. So the underlying trend in our gross margin before other income is actually positive before you account for the things that we haven't done as well as we'd like to have done them. And then the other income itself is up very significantly, up from 6.2 to 12.6. Now, again, we sat here last year and said we're not sure that trend is going to continue, but what we're seeing is we have more space on our website to sell people, more things like shop in shop that Tim will talk about to sell people, and we think that is probably going to carry on being positive. How much more, we don't yet know. In terms of operating costs, here it's a tale of mostly getting the leverage right, and in one case, not. So trunking and delivery, our growth was 13.3%, which is obviously better than the sales growth, and therefore you got the leverage. The CFC cost, now despite having a very poor second half in the facility, and the UPH in the facility actually being quite a long way down, and Tim having to reintroduce manual picking on trolleys, overall we got a little bit of leverage out of that CFC, which I think is quite good. If you look at other operating costs, which are fairly small, they're adverse a little bit. And admin expenses, including marketing, were adverse to sales by a few percent. D&A obviously levered the other way. So the main movement here is that admin expenses, including marketing, was not as good as I think you would have hoped. So what I've done is to show you the marketing and break it out. On the left-hand side of the page is the vouchering. And you'll know that the vouchering goes in the gross margin. And because we were having to chase customers, fewer customers to get in because we had limited capacity, our vouchering costs are lower. As a proportion of sales, they're down quite a bit. However, on the other side, we decided to invest in some other types of marketing, particularly things like Google AdWords. And we trialed them and they worked, but we spent quite a lot more on that and also on the production of marketing materials. So our other marketing costs, which are in the admin costs, which I just showed you, were up. Overall, net-net, the marketing itself was pretty much flat on the year. We would expect those other marketing costs to come back down in the course of the year. So looking at the EBITDA margin, it didn't progress as much as we would have liked it to. We would have liked to have been north of 5. I expect without the problems we had in the CFC, it would have been north of 5. I think if you think back to the gross margin, where we've clearly spent money on PDAs, we spent money on waste. If you think about the UPH in the CFC, where we didn't accelerate as much as we wanted to, we didn't get it back to north of 120. That's cost us money. Nevertheless, the EBITDA margin has been going in the right direction. And if we look at the underlying, I think somebody commented this morning that actually our EBITDA fell quite significantly during the second half. Well, let's give you the breakdown. So the first half EBITDA was 14.3. The second half EBITDA was 13.6. So the first half EBITDA margin, as I said, was 4.8%. The second half EBITDA margin was 3.94. If you wanted to, you could strip out the other income and try to look at it after the other income. I don't think that's a sensible thing to do, but if you wanted to, you could do it. And I think there you would say, before other income, our EBITDA was 8.8 in the first half. In the second half, it was 6.5. So even taking a very negative view of this, actually the EBITDA margin is still quite strong. So looking at the balance sheet, and there's some quite marked movements in here, which I'll try and talk you through. So if we look at the non-current assets, as you'd expect, property, plant and equipment have gone up because we've bought property, plant and equipment. There are some other non-current assets there, and there is a, there's a movement in here, and you'll want to know what that is. That is largely intangibles, which is the IT that Mark Richardson has been responsible for, where we have some IT on the balance sheet. And secondly, some deferred tax. We've recognised a slightly higher tax asset, and that's the, those are the two movements there. If you look at current assets, cash and cash equivalents are down because we've spent cash on CapEx, obviously. Other current assets, and actually look in the notes, you can see that this has moved quite significantly, although here it's quite flat because there's actually a £30 million deposit in here. The underlying movement is actually from 31 to 52. And just to give you some breakdown on that, the movement in those are roughly as follows. So trade receivables, around £5 million movement. Waitrose, and that's the timing of bonus and overriders because their year end is the end of December and ours is the end of November. That's about 4.5 million of that. VAT, because we are now buying capital assets, we're paying VAT on capital assets and recovering it later from HMRC, is running at around 6 million of that. And the other three small items were prepayments on our CapEx facility in terms of fees, rent of 1 million and other of 1.8. Going further down the balance sheet, you can see that trade and other payables have also moved out by around 20 million. And the breakdown under that is that salaries and wages, the movement there is 2.2 million. You'll ask, well, why have we increased a payable under salaries? It's simply that we paid salaries on the 28th of November and the year ended on the 27th, and so it slipped a day. Normal trade movements moved by 12 million. We had a CapEx accrual in there of 4 because we're now ordering equipment and paying for it later. And other resales, so goods recognised but not invoiced. So we took them in to the facility, but we hadn't been invoiced for them. It was around 2. So that's the total of movements there. Obligations on the finance leases is to do with, obviously, leasing vans and leasing equipment. Other current liabilities, the movement is fairly small. And the rest, I think, you would expect. So the balance sheet movements, I think, my summary of it would be that, and I'll come on to talk about CapEx, is the CapEx is lower, the debt is a little bit lower than people probably expected, and we think the cash management has been rather sound. Looking at cash flow, you can see that, the main thing to look at here is the operating activities generated 26 million of cash. We paid some interest. The investing activities of 113 million don't match the CapEx. That's because there are some leases and IT payments that are outside of these investing activities, which total 13 million, which are partly in the financing activities and partly in operating activities. So overall, started the year with opening cash of 155, ended the year with cash of 92.1. Here's the CapEx breakdown. I think it's probably fair to say we've been cautious on CapEx, cautious in terms of our outlook, in terms of what we're telling people and budgeting for CapEx, i.e. we're budgeting for higher figures. And when it comes to it, actually we end up paying people late because the suppliers are late, and also we've taken out things that are non-essential. Some optional CapEx has come out. So overall CapEx for the year, 126 million, which I think is a little lighter than we had expected, probably 15 to 20 million lighter than we had expected at the in the second half of the year. So the summary, I think, is that we think we made significant progress to grow sales in a very weak UK economy. Our sales growth is much lower than we would have expected at the start of the year. It's been much lower in the second half, but we're proud that we actually managed to grow it. We think the balance sheet is in good condition, with 92 million in cash and undrawn facilities of just under 79 million. And in terms of guidance for Q1, we think guidance for Q1 is around 10%, which is a little bit lower than Q4, but broadly in line with Q4. And I think as we were talking on the phone with some people this morning, we expect an acceleration in Q2 and Q3 and Q4. And we can talk overall for the year if people have got questions at the end. So that's my summary of the figures, and now over to Tim to talk about the operation.
Thank you, Andrew. Right. So highlight for the overall market is we continue to see market growth. The market grew. Every major player reported growth in their online business in 2011, despite the economic headwinds. Current IDD forecasts the market going to £11 billion in 2016. And, you know, the key in our minds is as the proposition improves, then the market improves. So we're working on enhancing our offer to our customers with further development of our grocery range, continuing our competitive pricing strategy and enhancing it, and in continuing to drive enhanced usability and accessibility across all the different platforms that we communicate with our customers. Range is the other key area, and we're going to expand our ranges and therefore expand our capacities to fill that demand. So we're looking at expanding our capacity from the 131,000 peak orders that we achieved last year through major projects in our existing warehouse to drive up towards 160,000 orders of capacity by this year end. We're also enlarging our delivery network. We rolled out two new spokes last year in Bristol and in Wimbledon, and this morning we actually opened our new spoke in Oxford. Our second warehouse, as Andrew mentioned, is on time and on budget and expected to go live in our Q1 of 2013. At the heart of this business remains our customer, and to serve them best, we continue to be an innovator and an investor in technology. We've talked about channel shift before, but I think it's worth just re-emphasizing the point that what drives customers to want to shop in new fascias, new formats, new companies are improved range, improved pricing, improved service. If you can do those things better than the incumbents, that's all right, no worries, then people will shift towards you. And we've seen it in this industry several times over the last 60 years. Pre-1950s, all self-service from a counter, man or woman behind the counter, all the customers had to queue up and ask for their items. Individual food items were actually poured out or, you know, sometimes, say, came out of a sack. High prices, limited range, bespoke service. Sainsbury's introduced the first self-service supermarket in the U.K., and we moved from to small local stores. We then introduced the first high street chains. What did we see? Wider ranges, lower prices, moving customer demand, but actually at the cost of limited service. Then along came Asda and Tesco's with their large out-of-town supermarkets. Again, wider ranges, lower prices, less convenient locations, less personalized, and worse service. But nevertheless, the large market shifts. We're now starting to see a shift into online. As online grows in terms of the proposition it serves to its customer, we believe it will offer wider ranges, it will offer lower prices, it will offer superior freshness, it will be convenient and easy to use, and have leading-edge availability and reliability. If we can achieve all of those things, we believe we will see a significant channel shift. So we continue to develop the online grocery proposition, and that's our focus for the coming year. In range, we're targeting over 30,000 grocery SKUs by the end of 2012, including international ethnic. We'll be adding additional non-food range as well over the next couple of years, and we'll be focusing on freshness. We'll be focusing on price, and we'll be focusing on the service, the accessibility, and the usability. And we've reached 18% of orders in the last period of the year across our mobile devices. And of course, the key metrics of living up to the promise of delivering what we promise to deliver to our customers and delivering on time will be key focuses, and driving those stats back to the best levels that we've achieved and beyond. In terms of range, we aim to offer the broadest and most diverse grocery range to our customers. Unfortunately, due to the building works that we engaged in this year in Hatfield, we had to slightly curtail our range. So although we improved it with new offers from different suppliers and focused it more, in actual number terms, it decreased slightly. And we've now started to reverse that trend, and we're going to see it go significantly in our customers' favour over the course of the year. Some examples here of our range increases during the year were the launch of the French Authentic range from Carrefour, the Reflet de France range, the launch of our shop-in-shop for the Daylesford Organic Farm, meaning that at 0.45% of the UK grocery market, we are approaching approximately 7% of the UK organic market. And so we rolled out the shop-in-shop for Daylesford, but we also rolled out shop-in-shops for more mainstream products like Weight Watchers and Nivea. And these allow our suppliers to highlight their goods and their ranges and make sure that people can shop just from the selection of products that they want to show them with richer and more information. We're going to roll out more of our own brand, and this is really both a combination of a range extension but also a key price proposition. So our own brand is to offer customers a greater choice and a wider range of prices. This is not to replace our supply partners Waitrose own label products. It's to offer more diversity and more range. It's to fill in gaps in price quality points in the Waitrose range. And it is targeted at the same quality and price equivalent as standard Tesco's and Sainsbury's products. We extended it last year to over 600 lines. We're set to expand it further this year. And we also did a major redesign of its packaging to make it look much more appealing. We've put on this slide four examples of where the existing Waitrose range, although offering exceptional value to customers, has products that are different in quality, different in where they've been sourced from or how they've been shipped, or their size or colour or some difference that has made they're different, good value for money, but actually are not equivalent to standard Tesco's and Sainsbury's products. And the examples are the British beef stewing steak, for example, where Waitrose are £8.87 a kilo, but the standard product from Tesco's and Sainsbury's was £8.25. There is now an Ocado line at £8.24 a kilo. Or smoked salmon at the higher end, where the standard Waitrose product is £39.90 a kilo, but Tesco's and Sainsbury's were between £33.33 and £34.90, and the new standard Ocado range is at £33.25. This is to ensure that as we seek to become a much larger grocer, we can continue to attract customers from the mainstream and that they can replace their mainstream shop that they were doing at Tesco's and Sainsbury's with a shop from Ocado, getting at least as good quality or better quality, but at the same price as they were able to buy those goods from the competition. It's very important. We'll continue to roll it out, and it will continue to enhance our price competitiveness. We're also becoming increasingly price competitive on branded goods, on standard branded goods. In fact, these days in the grocery market, you hear a lot about different price matching strategies, different price guarantees from Asda, from Sainsbury's, and from others. This was something actually that we started a trend in early 2008 when we launched our Tesco's price matching. We started then on about 3,000 lines where we matched the standard pricing every night of every identical product that we could find in our shop that was sold in Tesco's. We've continued on that strategy, challenging our customers to find lines in our stores that we weren't matching that were available in Tesco's store. And we've rolled that out to about 8,000 products today. But customers still challenged us because we run our promotions on those lines and Tesco's run their promotions on those lines. And so to ensure that we're offering enough promotions, and over the course of the last year, we offered an increasing amount of them, and to ensure, therefore, that post-promotion activity, customers still getting exceptional value, we've started monitoring our baskets. Much as the famous Tesco's versus Sainsbury's ads that run, you know, we took a million random baskets on Monday and we compared those baskets at Tesco's versus Asda, and Tesco's is cheaper on X percent of them, we do the same analysis. And for the month of October, 69.5% of the baskets were cheaper at Ocado than at Tesco's. So the myth and the perception that customers pay more money to achieve our outstanding service is false. 69.5% of our customers' baskets were cheaper shopped at Ocado than they would have been shopped at Tesco's for identical products. So on the one hand, the Ocado own label will be addressing key price point differences in own label, whilst our continual price matching and increasing promotions ensures that on branded goods, we're also offering exceptional value. During the course of the year, we went one step further and we launched the Ocado Saving Pass, and we've started rolling it out to several thousand of our customers. For a small annual fee, currently £8.99 a year, customers can enjoy between 10 and 15% off over 600 leading branded lines. Those lines include a number of them in the image, such as Duracell, Evian, Pampers, Tampax, Pantene, Crunchy Nut, Special K, Gillette, but also include some key niche suppliers like Ella's Kitchen, our leading baby food supplier, such as the organic own label veg boxes, and now a number of the Daylesford organic high-end organic products as well. This is supplier funded and margin maintained, and actually could be best described as Costco within Ocado, a model where one supplier in a category wants to be the category killer and therefore offers us cheaper supply in order to dominate their market category. And I think it offers exceptional value to our customers. I know my own delivery pass, my savings in week two, exceeded the price of my annual pass. Now, most of these lines, not all of them obviously, but most of these lines are already Tesco's price matched. So on all those that are, this is a guarantee of 10 to 15% below Tesco's pricing all year round. So we think this is an exceptional product that we're offering to our customers, enhancing the value proposition. At the heart of everything that we do is constant innovation, largely driven by Ocado's technology team, formerly run by my colleague Mark Richardson, who recently and quite excitedly has joined the board as our new operations director. To highlight a few of the changes that we made during the course of the year, our mobiles. We made a number of changes to our existing platforms, our iPhone, our Android and our iPad. We also rolled out onto the Windows 7 and BlackBerry, completing all the major smartphone platforms. We added one-click additions to existing orders on our iPhone, and that's proving very successful and popular with our customers. If you've got an existing order coming, you can, with one click, add an item to that order. There's no need now to go in, find the order, ask to edit it, find the item, add the item, and go through the checkout walk again. You can do a one-click add. In November, our mobile checkouts reached over 18% of all checkouts. For a platform that was launched to skepticism in 2009, we think that's an amazing achievement. And if you roll that forward to into the current year, we clearly have expectations to exceed £150 million of sales across our mobile platforms. That's a big business that people didn't expect to exist only a couple of years ago. In terms of our capacity, we continue writing a lot of innovation and a lot of code that helps us to run our facility. But behind the scenes, we do other things that we've highlighted here, such as our new 3D simulation and live monitoring of our warehouse. And this is software that will help to ensure that we can more accurately predict our capacity going forward, more accurately predict where bottlenecks may occur, and therefore more reliably deliver capacity enhancements in the future. We had to write the 3D simulation software that we have in our warehouse using 3D gaming technology because no commercially available simulation packages could handle the number of moving parts in our warehouse. And so our software teams wrote it using platforms designed for something very different. And it's really quite useful and special stuff for us. We wrote new control algorithms to improve the tote flow in our building, enabling us this year to get more than 10% more totes through the same parts of the warehouse in an hour than we could historically with better control. We've written new software in our delivery area which is just rolling out now in terms of a bespoke satellite navigation system, better van tracking and routing technology, which will enable us to continue improving the drops per van per week, which has been the clearly the easier predictor and the constantly improving statistic and the larger part of our operational cost. And so that's rolling out right now, gaining us greater accuracy with our delivery drivers. And, you know, constantly updated maps and technology to ensure that on peak days when there's special events going on, our sat-nav can navigate them past that and ensure they don't drive into traffic, etc. We've also improved our cubing algorithms in our warehouse to ensure that we fill our totes well and reduce our product damage. We've launched a number of things in our customer service area. So having run one CRM platform for the previous 9 years, we launched a new one. We call it Allo internally. We also launched on our website Where Is My Order functionality. And we've also started informing our customers of a tighter time window than that they've booked. So if you book a 12-to-1 delivery slot, you're now receiving a text message from us, or on your mobile or website, you can look at Where Is My Order, and you'll see an estimation of when we're going to arrive within the window, within the one-hour time window, to a 25 or 30-minute window. So that if you're sitting at home waiting for us, but you want to jump in the shower or something, you get a better indication of when we're actually going to arrive. I think it's clear that we want to drive customer service, we want to drive operational efficiency, and we'll continue to use technology and innovation to do that. We talked a lot last year about the major capital projects for CFC1. We wanted to give you a quick update here. The ambient mini load, which is the picture in the middle called the ASRS, is 100% utilized today, enabling us to store 40,000 boxes between our decant area and our picking areas. It's the image in the middle, and the fact that it's got a lot of green in it is the indication it's full. So every one of those green boxes is livestock in that facility. The conveyor extensions, we've added around 5 kilometers of conveyor to our warehouse, basically enabling us to join up our picking zones with more conveyors and our dispatch area from our picking zones, again, with more conveyors and more capacity, enabling us to continue to grow. The software that we had hoped to put live over the summer to enable us to grow in Q4 did go live over that period, actually the benefits of which we started to feel in the last week of Q4. And the benefits of which are ongoing, but that software is live 100%, and we operate the building on it now and is giving us significant enhancements. The new ambient zone pick aisle is the one at the picture on the right. The fact that you can see green boxes on the left-hand side is live stock in the aisle, and the red blurry images are actually customer boxes going through that. As we stand today, we've rolled that out to about 2/3 of its full capacity, and over the course of the next few weeks, we'll be taking it up to 100%. The biggest project of the year actually isn't due to go live until next month, until February. It's the start, and it's due to ramp up during February and March, and it's the OSR2. You can see it on the left-hand image there. It's the large 18 meters tall racking and picking system there. Capable of picking about 150,000 units a day, about 15% of the peak day capacity last year, and capable of delivering the significant range extension that we've been talking about this year for us. The fact that it looks very silver in that picture and not green is because it is still empty and it's due to start ramping up during the course of next month. So a lot of ongoing projects that will deliver to us significant capacity, range and efficiency enhancements over the course of the next 12 months, some of which are live and some of which are just about to start ramping up now. The main reason for our float a year and a half ago was to deliver us funding to expand our business in the medium to long term, which is around the CFC2 project. We purchased the land in March last year. The building, as you can see in the left-hand image, is substantially complete. The material handling equipment installation has begun and is advancing well. You can see some of the connecting conveyors and some of the decant conveyors in some of those images there. So equipment installation is ongoing. I think there are, you know, suggestions that you know, we're being optimistic in terms of continuing to say the project is on time and on budget. I just wanted to reassure people that we have actually planned for quite a significant period of testing and commissioning in that building, so that although we're talking about a planned go-live for Q1 of 2013, our contractors are expected to leave us in mid this year, having handed over all of the building and infrastructure to us to complete ongoing commissioning and testing. We've spent £72.6 million on it during last year. It's just huge for us. We're going to turn it on with 120,000 weekly orders of capacity. We aim to have taken the capacity of the rest of the business at that stage up to about 160,000. Never in the 10 years that we've operated have we had more than 2 or 3% of capacity headroom at any one point in time. So this will be a totally new thing for us. We've never been able to actually extend our capacity in a building that we weren't shipping customer orders out of, which obviously has meant our job up to now has been much harder than building a dedicated facility away from the daily business of shipping groceries to our customers. And so when we turn that on, we'll have a lot of excess capacity. It will turn on with significant operational efficiency. The operational efficiency that we're looking for in that building would mean that it's the cost of an order would be about 2.5% of sales less than the cost of an order being shipped out of our current building today. So a significant operational efficiency to come out of that building. And as I say, Q1 2013 for go live. We also, behind the scenes, have been building up our delivery network. We opened the Wimbledon spoke last year and the Bristol spoke. Wimbledon was a capacity enhancer for London. Bristol took some of the... It was also a capacity enhancer in terms of some of the deliveries that it now serves or previously served out of Weybridge and Hatfield. It's now fully operational. And we built Oxford last year, and actually its first deliveries left Oxford this morning. Again, that is an enhancement, no new geography, but it gives us more capacity in Weybridge, more capacity in Hatfield, and allows us to offer customers in Oxford more slots, starting earlier in the morning, finishing later in the evening, greater availability, which leads to greater growth in that area. At the same time, it will help us to cannibalise our delivery costs by allowing us to deliver from a location closer to our customers. We won a number of awards for our service, for our customer initiatives, for our safety, for our vehicle fleet, and obviously it's something that we're very proud of. In summary, the online grocery market continues to gather pace. All the major players reporting growth in excess of their bricks and mortar channels. So we are continuing to see channel shift from bricks and mortar into online grocery. The latest expectations from the IGD of £11 billion market by 2016. We know from experience that adoption and channel shift is driven by enhancements to service, price, range, freshness, availability, and ease of use. As you get better than bricks and mortar, more people want to shop with you. We're continuing to enhance our service that we're offering to our customers, continuing to develop the pricing proposition, the range appeal, and in particular the own label and non-food. We'll continue to invest in technology and innovation to drive enhancements to the customer service and to our operational efficiency. We're continuing our investment in capacity and in operational improvements so that we can serve what we believe is a significantly growing customer demand. We're on track for future growth and profitability. Obviously, we were disappointed at the back end of last year with the growth rates that we achieved due to capacity constraints, but we're back in growth mode. We're happy to take Q&A at this time to either Andrew or myself, or if you want to address any rest of our team, we've got some more of us are sitting in the back of the room. Yes? Yes.